Sweet. Hello, and welcome to episode 2019 of the Foam News Collective podcast. I'm KT.
2019?
Here with... What? Did I say 20...
2019? Yep,
20 episode... No, episode 29. Really?
You yes. said episode... It said 2019?
Me when 2020 is only three days away.
It's great to be hanging out with here with y'all, with no looming worldwide medical catastrophes on the horizon here in 2019. Just vibing and having a good time. No, wow. Anyway, yes, episode 29, no teens, of the Foam News Collective podcast. I'm KT. I'm here with Vile and with Grim.
Hello.
Say what's up, y'all.
Hello.
We have a very special guest, but before we introduce our guest, Vile and I have something kind of cool that we're looking forward to that we're excited to tell the world. We sort of teased at this when Boomstick was on, and now we actually sort of have confirmed all of the details. Vile and I will both be at Maryland Mayhem.
Yes. My first big event. It's my first big event.
And our first time actually getting to meet in person, even though we've known each other for so long. In addition to that, we went ahead and got a table at the show, at the, what are they calling it? The BlasterCon or
Foam? Is it like a Foam Con type thing?
Foam what Con is it? End it Wars, is. But I don't know what theirs is.
11th Hour? BlasterCon.
Well, 11th Hour is the... So the 11th Hour is that day of games.
Yeah, and it's BlasterCon is what I see. It's 11th Hour and BlasterCon. Okay. Yeah.
That's what I thought. I literally just signed up for it like an hour and a half ago.
And I'm in the middle of signing up for it. I'm on the website right now.
Yeah. The point is, we've already reserved our table. And not only will we be there hanging out, talking to people... We will intend to have some like stickers and stuff, maybe some merch for sale, but definitely some like giveaway stuff. I'm also working on a hypothetical project that I am hoping to sort of do a first try at this, which is a little bit of a foam flinging hobby museum that's like a traveling, sort of like a traveling museum thing. I've gathered a few interesting pieces that have been visible like in YouTube videos and are historic in some way, or they have like hand-painted art by someone who like not everybody has access to art by them. I'm planning on bringing Axel Sorax donated to me the trilogy that has the magazine system that Domachevsky designed based on Jolt King's prototype of it. I have that now. And I'm going to bring that. And I have some hand-painted blasters and I have some old prototypes and stuff. So I'm going to try it out at this show. So definitely come by and say what's up and try out some weird old blasters and check out some hand-painted stuff. We'll see what kind of crazy mask Vile is wearing.
Yeah.
His identity. But yeah, I just wanted to put that up front because I want people to know, yo, we're going to be there and we're excited to meet people. But today we're talking to Bruce Lidl of Lidl Dynamics, whose design work in stringers has been increasingly popular lately. And who's sort of becoming, I think a lot of people are looking to as sort of the expert on that kind of blaster design. How is it going, Bruce? Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me. I wouldn't say fully expert yet, because I'm still learning something every single time I design something, but it's getting better.
Being an expert, I don't think it means you have to be perfect or know everything. I think it just means I don't know who else I would name.
How about we call him leading expert, since he appears to be the one who knows the most currently.
That's perfect. That's really good. I like that. Regardless, we're excited to have you on and get to chat a little bit about your design process and sort of just have you offer your thoughts on some of the other stuff we're talking about. We, of course, have questions from our Ko-Fi subscribers for you later, and we'll have you play our very low-stakes trivia game later on. But to start off, would you mind just telling the folks, like, when did you get involved in the hobby? How did you get involved in the hobby? And how did that turn into wanting to actually design for the hobby?
Kind of happened at once. I was never really invested in Nerf as a kid. I got into 3D printing, like, what year is it? About 5 years ago. And then I just eventually just bought a cheap blaster off of Amazon. I think it was a Disruptor, that revolver thing from Nerf.
A classic starter blaster.
And then I just ended up printing things for that Disruptor, like originally off of Thingiverse, like simple mods and just plug in barrels and stuff. And yeah, that
how long were you
just
into 3D printing before getting into Nerf?
I was doing an apprenticeship for a dental technician, and like 3D printing is pretty big there, and it's like an increasingly popular method to fabricate things. Like, instead of plaster models, you start just printing out models that you scan beforehand, and it's all a really fast process. And I was working in a pretty backwards lab and just started like teaching everything myself. So that's how I got into 3D printing.
I wish this audio medium could translate the look on my face when you said that you effectively came to the hobby via your work at a dental lab, which that I love hearing the stories from people how they got into this hobby. That's amazing stuff. Anyway, continue, please. So you were printing, you were teaching yourself printing at this job at the dental lab.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, I just kind of lost my line there.
Oh, you're all good.
Just did little trinkets and stuff, and then just started modding that Disruptor. Then I thought, pretty cool. Like, I didn't expect a cheap, like, toy blaster, pistol, whatever, to shoot like in that ballpark of like that Nerf Elite standard. That kind of seemed like it shot very strong to me. Like, usually when you expect Nerf, it's you just expect like a dart falling out of the barrel, like, essentially. Right. And that kind of interested me, and then I kept going, and then I bought a Strife and modded that until it broke. I still have the shell of that thing somewhere, but it's completely gutted. And yeah, it's kind of hard to get blasters for cheap around here, so I scavenged off of eBay, and then I thought, like, I want a full auto blaster, but I can't really buy it with my salary. Like, dental technicians don't earn a lot here. So I went off and started like designing a pretty much mechanically a rapid strike that looks like extremely brick-shaped Strife. I don't know if those videos are still online. I think I just posted them on Reddit once. It had a ridiculously fast rate of fire, but it was very, very prone to like wear and tear because the entire gearbox and everything was printed. And yeah, I just wanted to make a simple blaster. And yeah, from there, I eventually moved out, got a resin printer and everything, then started printing flywheels and other really bad ideas in hindsight. Did a rival blaster that was powered with a printed blower that still is in pieces somewhere. It got showcased on this week in Nerf, I think.
This week in Nerf?
Yeah. They showed that thing, and that kind of gave me like a bit of motivation to push further. And yeah, the project ended up no way because you couldn't really source the hardware if you have to change the flywheels after every burst. yeah, so Yeah, I don't know. Then I just started thinking simpler and made some like a simple stringer, like as simple as you can get. It looked like a small bullpup pistol, which probably was a very unusual form factor, but it just kind of made sense with a stringer. So you always have the trigger in front of the magwell, so it's easier to link it. And that kind of took off, I suppose.
Which design was that?
Huh?
Which design was that?
I called it Hush because it was a bit quiet. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Nowadays...
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, I remember the Hush and, like, Striegels and other ones, as soon as you had worked on them, seeing them everywhere on Etsy by somebody or other people after, or, like, other people making them past a certain point in time. At least I think it was the Hush. I'd have to check that again, but I distinctly remember something similar getting, a lot of people really liking.
Yeah, there was also a period of time Captain Slug was doing some stringer designs.
It was the Hush. But
there were a few things that sort of existed around that time. Well, that's really cool. I mean, it sounds like you sort of had a desire to do more with less, to sort of simplify a little bit.
Yeah, it was my main gripe with stuff. I always wanted to build a Lynx, for example, but I couldn't because I can't really get the hardware here really easily. And doing electronic blasters sets me back 40 euros here just for a couple of flywheels and motors. So I just thought, maybe other people probably have the same problem, or it's like an easier point of entry for homemade blasters. So there might be an audience for that.
Yeah, I know the sort of metric versus imperial hardware thing has been an issue. Wasn't there like a whole metric Caliburn someone was working on?
I mean, there's a metric Lynx out there somewhere, but I can't quite remember who made it and how to get a hold of it. I just know that there are files online for metric Lynxes out there.
And of course, the context for this, in case anyone hasn't picked up on this, is that Bruce lives in Europe. And where, I didn't actually ask you this before, where in Europe are you?
Germany, pretty much exactly the middle of Germany.
Oh, wow. Okay, just right in the middle there. What's nerfing like where you are? Are you involved in clubs or kind of in the local hobby?
No, to my knowledge, there's no club here. I know there's one somewhere west of me, like 2 hours away, but I don't know, they probably do like a game a year, so I wouldn't say it's a big hobby around here. It's very niche. I just resort to shooting some targets in my my house somewhere.
It's interesting how many creators we bump into who don't really have a local scene.
I would say most of a lot of the designers I see that get talked about to a degree do not have contact with the hobby itself at large. Like, for example, Silly Butts, he may go to events, but there's no club in his area and he's up just off on his own. I've even asked him, he's like, hey, have you ever been to like a local game? Or there are a couple hours. He's like, nope. I just design in my house.
Yep.
It's like me. We don't have one here.
Yeah, you kind of keep to yourself, and I don't know if Domo has a club. I never thought to ask when we had him.
Yeah,
we should.
We should ask sometime.
Yeah,
I don't have one here either. Although I've talked for a while about wanting to start something, and I'm starting to meet a few people, so maybe something will get started. But there isn't one. Like, I didn't move here, and there was anything existing here in advance. You know, like I think I've been talking a lot too with people from other parts of the world who don't realize how sort of large and spread out the U.S. is overall. We do have a lot of large events, but like people to get to a lot of the large events, I mean, Vile's going to be flying most of the way across the country to come to Maryland Mayhem.
I've kind of tried to explain it to people that the United States is almost like 50 individual countries mashed together to a degree.
Yeah.
And then that's what puts it into perspective of like how difficult travel can be.
So you're not alone in not having a club, and not having a club.
I mean, hell, in my area, there wasn't. There is to a degree now, but any and all clubs that have existed either didn't last long, were very small, and I typically either had some involvement in its creation or networking with people that it exists. There is a big one up in Kansas City, but that's like 3 hours away from me. And then there was another one on the other half of Kansas, but I haven't seen anything from their Facebook page in a long time. So at least in my surrounding area, not the upper part of the state, there isn't too much other than the small games that go on.
Yeah. Yeah. And it varies so much from place to place. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, it's just whoever is the right person in the right place at the right time who decided to put something together.
Yep.
Speaking of the right place, right person in the right place with the right connections, I guess. We've been talking, it feels like, talking about the Chinese market and unique new products that are coming onto the market from there. This episode, we had a chance to talk about Blast Pro Shop, which is just opening up and is distributing in the U.S. right now, wants to also distribute in Europe and Canada soon, and has a connection with Think Big, Do Small, who we've talked about a couple... We talked about the Realm, and I want to say that they were connected to another product that we've covered on the show at some point. But they're already importing Unicorns and Diana and some other parts and stuff, and they're doing the Realm pre-order. I feel... Is this a tipping point in the availability of this stuff to Western markets? It kind of feels like that, right? Like the difference between having to like fiddle around with Taobao or use a what do they call them, the proxy shippers,
something like that. I've never personally worked with one, but I have heard of them.
Yeah, the ability to just go on a website and just like enter, like click some buttons and have the thing shipped to you feels like a sea change, even if it's just covering... I mean, obviously, we could get the Unicorn before, and yeah. I think Diana was available with a minimum of hoops, but it still wasn't like you could just go buy it.
The primary other individuals just being out of darts, and a couple other people have a couple small things, but with someone that's like actively looking into bringing in a lot of stuff, that's definitely refreshing. I'd say yes, it is probably like a landmark moment for us. It'll also change how we cover things,
for sure. Well, and also, I mean, I don't want to write off out of darts in this because we just had Luke on the podcast and he did say like, we're interested in these products and like the avenues are opening. It's getting easier to communicate with them. So like we may see not just new stores, but also some of the existing stores.
No, I definitely say out of darts is at variety. This scale that whenever they get around to also doing that, that's also a huge landmark moment because there are a number of hobbyists that will just exclusively shop at out of darts and mostly are only interested in getting stuff from there. It's also the most publicly widely like forward facing. So a lot of more people are probably going to find stuff through there. So both are going to have like lots of impact on how we cover things. This one just happens to be the one that's happening a little more sooner at the time.
I think what's interesting about it is Out of Darts has been in a bit of a unique position because they're large enough. They can buy, because a lot of times our limiting factor, and I remember when doing research on some of these old Chinese, you know, blasters or whatever it was, you know, Monkey Mods has been sort of another pipeline for a lot of us, but we still had to get it from overseas, and they're looking to now have a U.S. distribution. So we even have Monkey Mods doing this, and they were, I remember seeing them talk about their trouble of some of these Chinese vendors stating... They need, if they were going to cut, you know, sell to Monkey Mods, they need to buy 1500 units. And Monkey Mods is like, we would be lucky to sell 100. And, you know, so there was always a limitation sometimes between, the like larger shops being able to buy the quantity that they needed. And I think that these new shops that are coming in like Blast Pro Shop is just a great opportunity. These are these are people or individuals that have had that connection to the Chinese market, and they see that there's a demand, obviously, mm-hmm. in the States or, you know, Europe or wherever, and they can if they have to be the storefront, then that's fine. You know, they can start doing it. We even saw Phantom Tech, you know, open an Australian site, and that also started to open up other blasters that were originally only in the Chinese market. So we're seeing this all pop up, and this is only in the past year. So they're really starting to push harder and harder to kind of open up those you know, pipelines for all these interesting products that seem to be behind sort of this curtain, which is really awesome to see. Actually, it's definitely it's a huge thing for us, especially everywhere else in the world.
Mm-hmm. We're in a weird, like, what I feel like is almost a transitional period between, like, you could almost, like, separate hobbies into eras. This almost feels like one of those, like, transitional periods, because on the one hand, everything design-wise and all the events and everything else are fully, like, getting their traction, spooling back up, running at full speed, but then you have, like, a bunch of the content creators stepping down and coming away. So, like, some of the old personalities are leaving, but we're also in this period where new ones are coming in, and then everything else that kind of spooled down during the pandemic is, like, reached its full sprint speed now, it kind of feels like, to a degree. Right. That weird trade-off point, it feels like.
I feel one of the things that I think is shifting too is sort of the vibe is that some of these Chinese manufacturers are becoming aware of the existence of the hobby. And because before it was kind of like, oh, we get like hints of these things and we try to show them off to people, but there's no recognition that there's a market here. I think that they're finally realizing there's a market here, which is why some of these connections are starting to happen. And I think it's going to feed some of that transition that you're talking about, as the interconnectivity between different places grows. And, I noticed that, Blast Pro Shop is planning on carrying some products by Foam Blasted, another European designer. And I wonder what kind of things could happen in terms of manufacturing or I mean, like, Bruce, would you ever consider doing, like, licensing one of your designs to an importer like this, or having a company overseas manufacture like we just saw with the hamster turned into the new version, the pyre-powered version, which is injection molded.
Yeah, it was the 3D printed leaf, and then it got turned into the injection molded hamster, and now it forms better.
Right, leaf to hamster.
Yeah.
Well, how would you feel about something like that, like a project like that, Bruce?
It sounds good on paper, but I don't really think my designs lend themselves very well to injection molding. They are basically designed from the ground up to be 3D printed well without supports. Mm-hmm. And it'd probably take a really big redesign to make them, like, mold well. On the other hand, I of course would be interested in bigger partnerships.
I
don't know if my stuff is working that well for that.
I just want to say really quickly, you know, the Realm, I know that part of the thing with the Realm is that they're being manufactured according to Blast Pro Shop, they are, like, high quality PET G prints. So even just, like, having your existing designs printed on a industrial printer might be a great thing. Go ahead, Grim.
Oh, I was literally about to, the thing I was saying, was going to say, was the exact same thing you were saying. I was going to be like, oh, hey, they have these really neat industrial printers same that have brain. Really solid print quality. Yours would, like, probably do pretty good on that.
One thing I've noticed, though, a lot of these Chinese manufacturers will take stuff that was, you know, a lot of us would think, oh, no, it's only 3D printable. You know, it's too complicated. And we've seen them redesign them or make changes to them and make them injection molded or machined out of metal quite regularly, so I wouldn't necessarily put it past them to figure out a way to even make it actually as an injection molded, you know, type of setup. I think it'd be neat.
And if we're advocating for this too, I think that the simplicity of assembly would really be appealing to some of these companies as well.
Yeah.
The only thing I hope is that we don't unfortunately have it being one of those situations where if it did get an injection molded variant, it's not through knockoffs. On the note of injection molding, the distinct example that comes up into my mind that was both in a way a good thing for the design, but a horrible thing for the hobby and its designer. I believe it was Edrian or some other designer had, it was like this double barreled shotgun. That took shells.
It was Fominature. Adrian. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember talking to them about it at Endwar, I want to say, and they were saying that the hardware was really difficult to produce and get it assembled. So on the one hand, the assembled version was easier to assemble and more durable and like easier to get more of, but like he wasn't getting anything from it and it was knocked off, which was the bad part about
it. Does better connectivity between our hobby Chinese manufacturers with importers in between, does that make it less likely, maybe, that those kinds of knockoffs will happen? Because it seems like, you know, they're more likely to get caught. Maybe it's easier for them to recreate something with... I mean, I guess it's always easy for them if the files are just available. But...
I think we're still going to see that happen. What would happen, however, is you're still going to have the same companies that were going to knock it off, and then sell it on like Temu or other sites like that. And then you see them on like TikTok feeds. But what I think what might happen, however, is you'll have less of where I see a lot of it happen is in at the very least the United States. You're like a kid's parent might buy them something that they saw in like a really cool like shorts ad or whatever. That's a knockoff of a hobby design. They might instead be able to find these imported versions that were made and collaborated and brought to fruition a bit more ethically. They might end up going with those or finding those a little bit easier than they would have the knockoffs. So we might see a little less of the knockoff selling to the average consumer and more of the more ethically produced ones being purchased.
I only consume ethically sourced, free range, all organic 3D printed blasters.
Exactly.
I'm also. Have you, as a European, I want to ask, Bruce, have you ordered stuff from some of these companies that are importing stuff into Europe specifically? I know that you said that you are a customer of Blaster Time, who we also had in the podcast recently. Are you seeing greater availability of any of this stuff where you are in your local market?
Not exactly. Blaster Time is pretty much the only shop I can reliably get stuff from. Amazon occasionally carries very few rival blasters, probably due to like overstocking in other regions of the Amazon shops or whatever. But like rivals completely out of the question here, so I have to buy like a knockout from Blaster Time, and they are pretty much my only source for that kind of material. I have ordered a Firefly off of Monkey Mods before that took an age to arrive here and was an arm and a leg in customs, but that was pretty much the only time I ordered something like quote-unquote imported.
I think we agree that there is a shift happening here that might make it so that some of these things are more available for all of us, and that the, you know, community and the builders and the manufacturers are becoming a little bit more of a closed loop. So let's hope that trend continues. I think Blast Pro Shop is a part of that. I think Out of Darts can be a part of that. Blaster Time obviously is a part of that. And it's, you know, it's good to have these companies trying to do this thing out there. We will continue to follow it and report on it. Moving on. It's time to answer questions from our... Actually, I'm going to check the Discord and see if they drop. Because I'll be honest, I told our supporters a little bit late.
I think it's like the combination of us telling them a little late combined with the fact that we're like filming at a historically speaking odd hour for the podcast. This is like the weirdest hour I think we've it's a normal time. It's just the weirdest hour we've ever filmed the podcast itself at. The only other one being
we recorded with Blaster Time.
Yeah, I was gonna say that one seemed around this time. I just thought it was a little later in the afternoon rather than it being
I think this is just becoming the European guest time.
Yeah, which honestly works for me.
I think but we do have two questions. One which we sort of answered already from Colin Blank of Ghost Low Taco. What initially got you interested in using string powered blasters? Why use it over more traditional power modes like springs and flywheels? And we talked about, you know, part of that you said, Bruce, is because availability of hardware,
cost. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you developed a further affinity for this design style now that you've been doing it for a while?
Initially, of course, it was cost, and I can just also a bit of the appeal that I can just make an entire blaster out of just filament. I just buy €10 per kilo filament and just shell out a blaster, see if it works. If it doesn't, it goes on the pile, and then next step in the thing. I don't have to like remove all the hardware out of an old prototype and stuff it into the new one. I can just keep iterating faster, which is also pretty good. Like stuff like the that revolver, the nail clipper I made, had close to 20 prototypes in the end. So yeah, it would have been quite annoying to pull all of that out. And the other is by now it's I just kind of grown to like it. It's nice and quiet. My girlfriend doesn't complain that I rev up loud as hell flywheels like in the middle of the evening. And it's also kind of fun to like squeeze out just a little more performance out of this otherwise quote-unquote weak propulsion method. Pretty much just like chasing the record for that thing.
I think especially the part about sort of the simplicity of getting it going, just having to print a part, slap a piece of elastic on there. Vile, you were working on a project with one of Bruce's designs.
Yes, I'm working on a few maracas actually, for Polymaker, which is a filament company, because they wanted to bring them out to the Rocky Mountain Rep Rap Festival, and I suggested a few different blasters. A couple of them was from Bruce, and they landed on the maracas, and I thought that was a great option. I actually just got done ordering some elastic bands for it, so we will be they'll be having a little nice little target range. They thought it was great for the same reasons: no hardware, no lipos, no motors, and hopefully it'll be a good little match for them. Actually,
yeah. And part of the idea too is you've got people staffing this booth with a shooting range who probably haven't touched a Nerf blaster in 20 years, and so lubing plunger tubes and charging lipos is probably a little much to ask of them.
Yeah, and trying to keep it's a cost for them. It's such a cheap thing to build because they're supplying the filament, and if the only real cost is the elastic bands, it's kind of like, this is a fairly cheap thing for them to do. They could even print replacement parts while they're there. They could even, and you know, they could even try to build one while they're there, which would be kind of neat. I'm going to try to see if I can suggest for them to do that, because I think that'd be an awesome way for them to showcase printed blasters to the 3D printing community that, again, sort of doesn't know of our hobby, and get more people possibly interested. So I think that'll be a nice, awesome little showcase for them.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. It's just great to get other creators' work sort of just in new hands, who probably had no idea that anything like this existed. That's one of those, like, I think about this sometimes, the like first point of contact. That was a big part of what my original YouTube channel was based around, was a bad product is a bad first point of contact for someone with the hobby. if their first point of contact is at a 3D printing event and they're holding this fully 3D printed product and it's got a designer's name on it and they're like, I didn't even think about this. It didn't occur to me that this would be possible. That's a great entry into the hobby, I think.
Well, they start really looking. And the thing is there's so many designers, whether it's on Printables, Thingiverse, or Etsy, there is such a massive array of designers and blaster builds and mod parts and fully printed parts. It doesn't, like, there's no real limit to it. And that's what's really nice, especially for anybody who's just does 3D printing as a hobby in themselves. Like, they love to see what they can print. And when you just open up a whole nother door for them to be, hey, here's things that you can do with that, they a lot of times are just they're so floored. They're like, oh, I didn't even know this existed. And I've had that happen even on stream, because there's a lot of 3D printing channels that didn't know. And I pull up, you know, some 3D printed blasters and they're just like, I didn't even know. And now they're all wanting to build stuff. Like, it's a right. perfect opportunity.
One, two, now, three, four, five.
I also think this is like both one thing that is, and this is, I don't like this part about Etsy, but also this in this instance might work out for the benefit. So, for example, if you were to search up Lidl Dynamics on Etsy, the first things, of course, that show up are Lidl's designs. However, as you scroll down past like bar number two of stuff, you start entering stuff like Genco Megaworks X-Shot Micro, or then you get stuff like Full Auto FDL3, One Left, or HCTAC Diana Carbine Kit, or Edrian Knockout Kit. Like, it starts recommending all sorts of, like, this wide array of completely unrelated stuff. Then it keeps going to, as you scroll down, more stuff that actually is Lidl's designs just being sold by licensed resellers.
I remember when recommendation engines were like a thing you could choose to use.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just you search for something and it's just a recommendation engine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that kind of randomness of stuff might make them realize, oh, crap, there's actually like a whole bunch of stuff here in that regard, on top of finding Lidl stuff.
Hopefully. Mm-hmm. Hopefully. So, you know, we kind of drifted, but that is, thank you, Colin, for your question. If you want to ask our podcast guest questions, check out our Ko-Fi, where you can subscribe for a dollar amount, which is not a lot, and get that and other perks. We also have a question from someone who won an opportunity to ask us a question last episode with the trivia game we're about to play. Cat's Blaster Mods, valued member of our community, modder, Twitch streamer, and friend, was selected when Luke managed to, he won the trivia quiz. So Katz, as a result, gets to ask a question. And the question, incredible question here, really, really cutting to the heart, I think, of what our hobby is all about. Such a sort of vital, central question to the philosophy behind what we do. If fish could talk and airplanes could do jumping jacks, what flavor is the number purple?
That's a strong 7.
That's, I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yeah, you know, that's actually like a really avant-garde opinion, I'd say there. I'm going to have to think about this. That's actually like a really, wow, that's a paradigm shift there of like thought.
The fact that it's strong, too, more reasons for 6 to be afraid of 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not just
sure.
That 7, 8, 9, you know, it's also just kind of strong and scary. Well, okay, Cats, I hope that answers your question. You can go forth with that newfound confidence, slightly stronger understanding of the world. Now it's time to play our new trivia game.
Oh boy.
Last episode. So I'm going to preface this, which I didn't tell Luke this until after we asked the first question. The goal of this trivia game is for you to win. So don't worry. You'll be fine. The point of this game is, you know, we'll ask you three trivia questions that are related to the hobby. If you are able to get two of them correct, two out of three correct, they're all multiple choice questions. It's super, super chill. If you're able to get two out of three correct, you will win for one of our listeners randomly selected the opportunity to ask a question of our next podcast guest. I just crunched the numbers and did all the math, and our randomly selected Discord listener on the Discord is Ox. So Ox, cross your fingers and do other lucky stuff, and Bruce will be playing for your benefit. If you want to be entered as the potential random listener, be sure to join our Discord. At some point, I just make a post and be like, react to this message if you want to be in the drawing this episode, and then you do that. And then
Ox, I'm sorry in advance.
Hosts, do you have the questions open?
Yes I do.
Who wants the first one?
Sure, I can cover this first one.
Great,
alrighty. This episode we featured a 3D printed Aeon Pro kit by Parabellum Arms, a creator known mostly for building wooden blasters and kits.
I'm sorry, I forgot to tell you the name of the game. That's important. The name of the game is Spruce Needle 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 Tree. We will be asking you questions related to wood as it is related to the hobby.
Okay.
Sorry. No, that was an important detail.
Honestly,
that I forgot
I think
to put
that
at the beginning.
I really like the name. I didn't even acknowledge you hadn't said it.
No. It's just vibe there. Okay, go ahead.
All right, starting again.
Yes.
This episode, we featured a 3D printed Aeon Pro kit by Parabellum Arms, a creator known mostly for building wooden blasters and kits. In addition to darts, Parabellum Arms often creates what launchers for what other ammo type? Is it A, toilet paper wads? Is it B,
rubber bands?
A.
I think I know that guy.
Congratulations.
We didn't even have to get
ding,
through
ding, ding,
all
ding,
of
ding.
It.
Rubber bands.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, C was marshmallows, but great. Yeah, I had a feeling you'd know.
Yeah, he mostly does rubber bands. The other thing he has done other than flywheels is stringers, actually, as well. But those are like personal projects. I almost bought one of them, but I kind of decided not to, and now I regret it. Anyways, that was a bit of an aside. Next question.
You want to go about?
Yeah, I'll take it. All right. Perhaps reflecting the history of homemade Nerf blasters with wooden grips, pulls, and pumps, Nerf has utilized a faux wood grain on some of their blasters. Which of these series features faux wood grain parts? Is it A, Fortnite, B, Zombie Strike, or C, Roblox?
That's definitely B.
That would also be correct.
Answer? Oh, okay. Yes.
I'm just going to go for it because that would be correct. As actually, all of those would have been correct. They
yeah, I just remembered my hammer shot. That definitely has a wood grain. I'm not sure about the other ones because I don't have any of those.
Zombie Strike has a bunch of stuff with faux wood grain. The Sling Fire also does. But Fortnite has the like Tommy gun.
And then the shotguns DG. And some other stuff that do. Not the mag-fed one, but the one that was like a single shot had a wood grain parts on it and a couple of other things.
Mm-hmm.
That was all way past my time of buying actual Nerf blasters, I think.
for sure. Also Roblox, the Bees blaster, has a faux wood grain on the stock. That's the more obscure one, but any of them is correct. So congratulations.
Yeah.
For your final, so you've already won, but I'm asking you the third question anyway. Captain Xavier's range in a shady grove of farm trees in Washington State on the west coast of the United States is a well-known spot where many exciting blasters have been fired. But what, most likely, is the type of tree that makes up his grove? A, birch, B, sugar maple, or C, Douglas fir?
That's probably a fir by the looks of it.
Is that your final answer?
The Douglas fir then.
All right. You are absolutely correct. Wow. Although we don't know 100% for sure, the Douglas fir is a very commonly farmed tree in the Pacific Northwest and far away the most likely candidate for the trees on Xavier's playfield and range. I did make this question really, really easy because birch has really distinctive bark and the sugar maple, they're both deciduous. And fir is obviously a needly evergreen. So congratulations.
That was impressive.
Three out of three.
Yes, that was very impressive. I answered the first question before Grimms even had the chance to say the answer as an option. Incredible.
Very, very well done. So Ox, I'll be in touch to collect your question for our next podcast guest and let you know who that is. All right, hold on. Let's quick public team meeting here. We're just going to put this right out there. Should we tell people who the next podcast guest is? It's never been like a secret. But we also don't announce it.
I would say
should we
should, like, people, it drives more traffic to the episode. We already do fairly well with that, but I think it's like better that people know in advance, hey, it's going to be like this person next time rather than hit it for the mystery out of instinct rather than we never really officially sat down and said, hey, that's the policy.
Yes.
It just became
that
way.
I think that's so true.
I'm fine with it.
Okay.
Totally.
Well, so I will announce to y'all, if you watch this episode and you enjoyed having Beret on the show as our guest presenter, Beret will be our podcast guest next episode. So, Ox, you will get to ask a question of Beret, as will all of our Ko-Fi subscribers. So, thank you for playing our game. That's awesome. Perfect score. You're the first perfect score, because you're only the second person to play. Not that there's any degree of like consistency to the questions or anything, but you can have that merit badge of being the first perfect score in the quiz game. I want to go back to this thought about a transitional period in our hobby that Grim had, and think a little bit about the corporate side of the materials that we like to work with. Nerf announced what sounds like some significant cost cutting to their product line starting in 2025, or I should say Hasbro announced cost cutting in the Nerf product line. And I'm trying to get my head around the concept that they are saying they're looking at every aspect of the blaster and how to reduce costs, but that they won't cut costs in a way that impacts quality.
They already did that with Elite 2.0, for example. Elite 2.0 with the tack rails and everything else, the plastic, they simplified the stuff, not using as much paint. And all the
screws.
Other
plastic
stuff,
leaf
less screws. But the thing that I was going to say is they've already stripped it pretty far bare, short of going for smaller, more compact blasters. But the problem is that if what they're saying is less molding, more smooth blasters with more print on it and thinner plastic, I do not think that's going to last very long, because if that doesn't work, they're going to start going back to the problem with Elite 2.0. And then you have problems like the judge, where it's like gears would strip themselves and stop working. Already getting from what I've seen on a couple of the reviews of the Nerf Zombie line, people are already saying they don't like how the blasters themselves feel light and like cheap in hand. And the printing does not look very good. You have like a noticeable seam down the top and bottom where the printing does not continue because of the nature of how the shells are designed. If that's the case, I just don't think many people, at least hobby side, I think moms are still going to buy, you know, Nerf because they recognize the brand name. And their kid probably wants it. I think there'll still be a number of people doing that, but I think it's going to be, they might have an impact on their recurring customer base, because if little Timmy gets like a blaster and he drops it and it like snaps somewhere, or like internal stuff breaks sooner, and hobbyists are also not going to be happy with that, obviously. Hobbyists aren't happy with a lot of their current works either, aside from stuff like the double punch and such things. I know personally speaking, I didn't use a lot of the other brands' products save for their like pro line stuff because I'm very particular about plastic quality. It's why I still preferred to mod older Nerf blasters, but I mean, I can't even see myself getting anything new if that's the case. And I know integrators probably also wouldn't like that because that's affecting the actual structural integrity of what they're working with.
I mean, you know, we have workarounds, but it, you know, it reminds me of the old long shots, though, the original ones, because remember, they had fairly weak grips, especially when you started going stronger on springs, and people started to 3D print shell reinforcements for a while there. And then I, you know, the things that, like, again, some of us do in integration is we'll put smooth cast, like, you know, a two-part resin to help strengthen the shell, but it's more work. And you know, we see people like, even like those of us who do thrifting quite regularly for stuff, we'll even see these older blasters that are fairly, you know, strong, but they clearly were just abused and smashed and cracked, and you just look at it and go, how? And when you start making it thinner, that just makes it more prone to that. Any sun damage is just going to make it more brittle instantly, because even sun damage on the thicker stuff, while it does make it brittle because of it being a thicker plastic, it can withstand a lot more for a lot longer. And yeah, it's just, it's really reducing the shelf life, I think, of if they start going down that path.
You know, part of, like I was saying before, I worry a lot about first point of contact. And this is how you make a bad first point of contact, the blaster that can't survive. This issue that we had with the X-Shot long shot, right, where it seemed to not really be able to survive shipping, that's how you have a bad first point of contact. You make shells thinner, and now people are opening them up and they're already broken, and like, sure, maybe you have a great return policy or like stores will just swap them out, but like, that's still a bad experience. Even if the blaster is good, if they had to go through that, it's already a bad experience. And I worry about that in terms of the future of a hobby, because most people are getting their start as kids playing with blasters, or at least the next generation. Now is the time that they're having those initial contacts. But I also really wonder if this even matters to the hobby already. I was just looking at the Out of Darts website as an example, and even when I started in the hobby, not even all that long ago, it was very common to get upgrade kits for blasters like the Retaliator and the Strife and the Long Shot, and Worker was making, had sort of like standardized a lot of this stuff, right? Like, you could go, there's issues with the kits, but like, it, you know, you literally just buy a kit and it's designed for this off-the-shelf blaster. There was a little bit of that for the Dart Zone Spectrum, right? Like, you could get like Spectrum kits from Drac had one, and
it felt like Darts, every like large one. Etsy seller had a kit for the Spectrum at one point.
Yeah. And now it's kind of like, if you have some like weird blaster, probably the only person that's going to make one is foam blasted.
There will be like a couple,
he
like
likes to goof around.
I almost refer to them as like 3D printed DLC for blasters,
yeah, totally.
Where it's like a couple cosmetic, like small changes that you can get for a blaster. And that's about it sometimes.
Absolutely. It feels like that. For a couple different reasons, it feels like that era may have sort of ended of buying an off-the-shelf blaster and modding it to the specs that you want. Seems like it's gone. And part of that is that we now have new options. We 3D printing is so much easier. And Worker in particular, why would they continue to make those kits when they can just sell you their own entire fully functional blaster and you don't have to have any mechanical skills?
Mm-hmm. I would say, like, I'm not by any means an expert. I don't have any analytics here, but just from what I like gather from like the feelings of things, I'd say it's kind of like a multifactored situation in that case of like blasters, the stock off the shelf blasters haven't been doing as well in the traditional market. There is people after the pandemic, a lot of people were buying stuff like while they were indoors to plink with, and then they take it to a game and they're like, I don't actually like this thing. I'm just going to get something mm-hmm. like from the ground up custom that I actually like. And then there are those people who are too busy to mod or that are burnt out from modding. Like you have people who have been here for a while and they're like, I've done my share of those mods. I don't think I need to make another painted strife. I think I want to make this, like, I'm tired. I would like to just print this caliber and take it to a game and call it a day, you know? So, like, all of those are kind of combining to where it's just kind of, like, just 3D print it is kind of the consensus. Or get someone to 3D print it for you. Because it's just a lot simpler. Oftentimes the results are more effective in a number of ways. So, other than aesthetic work or just really liking the blaster, there aren't many reasons anymore, at the very least, to just open
up. It's more limited to age demographic. You'll see younger kids or, you know, like younger teens getting into like trying to do mods with basically what they have because they just don't have the money or the ability.
Like,
and they'll do that, but you don't see it as much in the older demographic like you used to see, where they were trying to push the limit of everything they got, or a new blaster came out, what's its potential, how far can I push it. That I've noticed a diminishing amount of people doing that. But yeah, so I mean, it's not that it's gone. I think it is just that the demographic has sort of aged out of it, maybe.
A lot of us just kind of grew up. I mean, for example, in my case, like, I'm most of the time when I modded stuff was, like you said, either when I had limited resources, or it's like I didn't have a full-blown job yet, but I was getting money instead of like stuff at Christmas, and I was just saving up. And it's like, all right, I'm gonna spend it on these parts for some blasters I have and then mod them so that way I can take them to games, because I still am not up to par with what everyone else has. So that's what I do. But now that occasionally when I do have the chance, I can just like outright buy a 3D print design, I'll just buy something from SFI. You know, it's like, I have enough things going on that I just don't have the like energy to mod something. I want to get around to actually completing some stuff, like some actually substantial stuff at some point, just to say I've done it, but it's not what I'm going to probably be using all the time at a war. Like, I will probably, when I go to pick something up, I'll probably, if someone has like a skewer or like a harrier, I'll probably borrow that and use it. Or I'll use my links, for example. It just with how our locals play, it makes more sense. And I think that's probably also part in that, how people play is changed a little.
Well, I think KT mentioned it, you know, Foam Blasted is somebody who's making a lot of mod parts for, you know, older blasters or sort of like forgotten things. And I think there's like, I'm in that sort of demographic. I like to mod for the sake of modding. I just like to mod stuff. And you kind of have to have that love. Beforehand, it used to be modding for a result, for a need. And that need can now just be bought off the shelf, whether it's printed or like a pro level blaster or whatever you need, right? There's something to fit any genre, any game type, anything. You can just buy it now. And prior, you had to have the ability to mod to hit that niche, to hit that thing. So those of us, there's like, again, there's still people who have that want and that like and that desire to mod just for the sake of modding because it's fun. But it is much, much smaller than it used to be. Yeah, obviously.
Necessity is the mother of invention. It's the same as you know, the Bruce's answer to Colin's question, why make stringers? Because I couldn't get hardware, right? Like this is how you take these whole new creative roads. Of course, Bruce is over here like, well, I can't even buy this stuff out here, right?
Yeah, I can't buy anything off of Silver Fox or something, but yeah, about the whole modding thing, it's probably also a bit related to like, if you just plink, it's, I don't know, it kind of feels like I have my chronograph, and part of the whole plinking process is like pushing the numbers of a certain blaster a bit, so I mod quite a lot. And when I don't go, I'm not like preparing anything for a game and just want to be done with a preparation and go out and play, I like calibrating and modding is part of the playing process for me. So I don't know, it probably also depends on, do you just plink, do you go to games, or but yeah, I totally agree that the demographic has gotten a lot smaller with just being able to just, I go to this shop, buy something, and then have my fun with it if I don't want to do all the rest.
Right.
I think specifically if I ever do go back to actually working on stuff, it'll be from more of an artistic standpoint and wanting to have fun with the process rather than it is the end result. Mostly just because I'm just not there with the creative energy right now, but I have ideas in my head of projects I want to make that involve paint jobs or custom work or other stuff. And I think that's probably where I'll end up finding any return to modding. And I think that's kind of where it is now. There are like these people who want to continue integration work and cosmetic work, and they're kind of still doing their thing. However many people that are left that are still doing that, they're going to continue doing that, you know, because that's what they enjoy. For example, like we still have Grim Reaper, we have Mr. Nathan. I mean, Vile does integration work, Casual Jerry, a number of people who that is what their love is. They're going to continue doing their thing. So there will always be that there still, I think. And the other, like, other point I want to make, like Vile had said, sun damage is a very real thing. I remember I was talking to someone because I had a really specific idea in my head for a mod I wanted to do, and it involved a clear recon. And I said, hey, I want it to hit X so it can actually use it at events. And then this individual later told me, it's like, hey, most of these shells have been sun faded enough, and like yours also looks like it, and the plastics have also aged enough, that any type of load of what you're talking about above, like a Tech 6, for example, is going to crack the interior and it's going to break. You're not going to get to use it for very long at all. So it's kind of like a lot of the shells I would want to work with to make something like war ready, in air quotes, to take to like a 200 FPS game, I just wouldn't be able to anymore.
See, they should just market the new thinner shells as pre-sun faded. It's functionally the same.
Pre-aged. Aged to perfection.
see, they're ethically sourced, aged to perfection. Fabulous. Really bespoke blasters.
They're already pre-thrifted and then put into a box.
Well, we always close this podcast out with a fun little roundtable question. A lot more fun than Nerf is shooting itself in the foot, for sure. Third-party files for Diana and the Juno dropped this week. The Juno especially is exciting because it's out of Dart's first open-source design. I think that's the one that we put in the show. Actually, as of this moment, I don't think we've decided whether it's a half-length or a full story, but we'll figure that out. I think is the first file I've seen for Juno. It's like the heel of the grip, but with no like with sling sling loop. Yeah.
Yeah.
Out of Darts is planning on open sourcing future products. They're on having the files be freely. I'm saying open source. I don't really mean that. They're not all necessarily open source, but the files are available. You know, that kind of open availability of files has been a big part, I think, of the growing and the success of the 3D printed side, particularly of the hobby. We also have, you know, people like Silly Butts fully recreating existing blasters as 3D models, whether just as working files or with the intent to actually print them or both. Vile, you were scanning blasters for a while.
Yeah, I'm looking to get my scanner back up and running to do that as well, yeah. Because it's, I think it'd be nice to do. Actually, you mentioned Silly Butts, and it reminded me of that. Scanning a blaster helps. It's terrible because you can't really use it for a whole lot, but you can decimate the file and then pull it in,
right?
And check your dimensions. Check to see if your shapes are kind of in the right spot and the right shape. It's good for that. Like, it's a great way to just double check for sanity's sake that it's actually, you know, close to that. And
right. And yeah. And for that kind of use, and for creating, like we were saying, like hobby kits that modify existing designs, I'd like everybody to pick one closed design blaster that you'd like access to design files for. Either something you would like to dig in and you like the aesthetics of something, but you want to redesign it and not have to model it from scratch. Or something that you think could use add-on parts that would be easier to design having those files. It could be like a major company blaster, or it could be like an old 3D design that the files don't exist anymore. What are you thinking? If there was one that you wanted to do something with.
I actually have one already, and it's the Woozy specifically. The step files, like if I could get the step files for that. And the reason why is I have this design. There was a younger member in the hobby, kind of comes and goes, but he does concept art, and he did this really fun sort of Woozy with like a stock and, you know, attachments and stuff on it. It was a really neat design, and I have the image, and I've talked with him about it, and I actually started having to build it from the ground up. But the Woozy would have been fantastic to have as a step file to start from. If I had that, I could have just had the center of it all, like the main body figured out, and it would have done a whole stock attachment and, again, all this greeble work and like knuckle guard and all kinds of stuff. That would have been really nice, because again, I'm having to build it from the ground up myself instead, and it's taking a while. I kind of put it down for a bit. I actually went a different route, and I started using a fly core in it, actually. But yeah.
Fly core makes everything so much easier.
Yeah, it does. I was at least able to pull that in. That was very nice. But yeah, that would have been my pick, just to be able to do that, just because it would have saved me so much time.
See, in my case, I would have had, like, had this been a couple years ago, I would have probably had a very like specific answer, but I've seen so many like random projects that were going to start at some point that then never did or just are gone, that I've probably long since forgotten unless I hear them brought up. So as far as 3D designs, that off the top of my head, I don't really have anything in particular. But on the topic of like a blaster itself, my instinct was to go long shot, but that already has a long history of like blaster support. I was more thinking from like different types of shell reinforcement, but that's not really, that would require like injection molding and stuff and isn't very viable. I guess my final answer would be like the Deploy in particular, just because that was a blaster that I think is neat that just didn't get much love. It has like a really cool shell, but other than a couple people who were crazy and like integrated night finders and made it somehow elite performance, I haven't seen much done to it other than like
it has
a tutorial
like a
on
following.
YouTube where a dude who just like drilled into brass or something and then like put it in the barrel and then some other weird stuff. And it's like a 2008 video or whatever, you know, and it's like it's shot in 480p. There aren't many guides out there.
The Deploy has such a cult following. Like you either love it or hate it. Mm-hmm. And those that love it have really taken it to like a lot of, you know, obviously flywheel stuff, and people have put a couple of other different type of direct plunger tube systems in them. But yeah, that could be, that would be a really awesome one to get the files for.
All right. For lack of a better example from the top of my head, I would just say the Knockout, because I'm currently modding one and I would really like to like make it use Firefly shells, but I can't because I, well, I could, but all the measuring would probably drive me insane. Mm. I would have to replace the entire colored plasticky bit of it, so mm-hmm. that would just be handy right now. But otherwise, I don't know. I don't really have a need for that kind of files, other than passing fancies of modding.
Passing fancies of modding are valid, though.
That, yeah, I would, nothing, I would agree.
There's nothing wrong with that. I have two, and I'm literally just blanking on the name of one of them, and I'm gonna feel so silly when someone tells me. Oh, ha! One of them is the Moto Blitz, specifically because I think that there's a lot of potential for the spot where the shotgun is attached to be replaceable with other stuff. I would love to have a system where you could like interchange the front barrels on it, and having access to the files for that would make it so much easier to come up with those parts, to just be like, here's the dimensions of this part, what other barrels can we fit in it instead.
I actually would agree with you there on that one too, because this is going to come off as like, oh, I'm pretty sure I'm like one of the only people who probably is actually interested in this, in the Moto Blitz. But like, I really love the certain parts of the aesthetic of the Moto Blitz, but I am not a, like, the whole thing as a whole looks cool, but it's so close to like exactly what I'd want in a flywheeler's shape, but so far that I'd need like 3D printed pieces to cover up stuff. So what I, a lot of the stuff when it first came out, what I like photoshopped online, what I wanted to do with it is remove the master key, which I know is like weird because that's like half the reason people like it, but also remove the optic at the top of it, make it a flat top, and then smooth out the bottom section. But most of the issue comes from the bottom section because there are just so many parts where the Moto Blitz like air cannon thing with all the white components connects to it.
There'd be nothing there in that whole part.
Yeah, you'd have
you
to like
the Moto, not the Blitz.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
Moto only. Well, because I mean, like, part of my, you know, part of the thing, you know, talking about how blasters like the Strife and to a lesser degree the Raven, the Strife, the amount of support that exists still for the Strife, even though I'm fairly confident it's not in production, the original Strife. And obviously now we have
the
Pro Strife.
They still have the Modulus one online, but it's like off and on again thing. It's like every now and again it goes away and then it comes back.
The thing is, a blaster like the Moto Blitz, if it had like slightly more standard geometry, or if it was not an era where you could go buy a Pro Strife X probably for the price that it cost to mod a Moto Blitz, like it has the potential to be that kind of platform. If you were able to change the master key more, which is why I think having the files would really sort of open that door for a blaster like that to become that kind of platform. My other one is a 3D printed option. It's the Sobek. Man, just put it out there. We're never going to see it.
I hadn't even thought of that. Holy crap. Yeah. Yeah. The Sobek is like...
Was that the shot?
The shotgun that was going to end up being the game changer.
It was
one.
It was like the new Spring Thunder. I forget the designer's name. It had a new shell standard that was slightly larger. And 4 years ago, Rajar, I don't know how to pronounce his username. But it's like slightly larger, the shells are slightly larger, and it can fire like Mega XL and stuff that Spring Thunder can't. And now it seems like Silly Butts is gonna beat it to the punch with a totally new shell design. And it's kind of like, at a certain point, just like let it out in the world, let someone hack it together, or just make their own. It feels starting to feel like lost media. You know,
Yeah, no vaporware to a degree.
Exactly. So yeah, there's our list of you know, whoever has the rights to these things, I can send you my Dropbox link, and you're welcome to just send me the files, and I will make sure the world sees them.
I have to scan a Moto Blitz, is what I'm hearing.
It sounds like it.
Yes. Yes, please.
And with that, we've neared the end of our podcast. Bruce, thank you so much for coming on. It's been great to chat with you. And will you please tell the folks where they can find you and your work?
Yeah, I'm on YouTube, where I post a lot of work in progress stuff. Etsy, of course. Occasionally on Reddit, but not really. I also have an Insta that I don't use. So yeah, YouTube and Etsy is probably the safest bet.
Okay.
We'll have links to those in the description, as always. How's that clip hopper fed thing coming along? I'm so excited.
He used
that.
All his words in Lidl's. Now he ran out.
The podcast is nearing its word limit.
Yeah, that thing is sitting upstairs waiting for me to print the next iteration. I've all just right. let it rest for a week or two.
That's fair.
I don't know, with the one that's pump action, I'm really not that happy with the shape. It looks all boxy and cobbled together. The one that's looking kind of like a minigun, I'm quite happy with, but I want to release them together as like alternate file builds, you know, like the old Lego sets with alternate build. Yeah. And I don't know, I'm not happy with the LMG looking thing just yet, so I'll probably give that a bit more thought in a bit. But yeah, it'll take a while till I release it anyways, because I like to just keep stuff sitting and just, well, usually I just notice a couple extra flaws when I just have things sitting around instead of scrambling to hotfix things when the first few files have been sold.
Yeah. Well, whatever you come up with, I'm looking forward to it. I've loved your design so far. And thank you for doing great work for the hobby. Grims and Vile, any last thoughts before we head off?
Probably streaming as usual over on Twitch. Working more on my Merge Masters build.
I don't know what I'll be doing next. My head just feels like it's underwater right now.
Oh my god, yeah. Vile and Grim are both a little under the weather today. So
I'm feeling better today than I was yesterday, but yeah.
That's good. Well, I think we'll call it and let him go heal. JK, we still have to record the show.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I'm allowed to leave. I'll just go to bed.
That's true. You're just done. You can just do whatever you want. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Have a good one.
Yep. Have a good one, guys.
Goodbye.